The totality of this pressure eventually choked off access mobility. Air and sea power could operate throughout the productive process, not only to affect the battlefield, but to determine how much and what kinds of military equipment were produced and deployed. Indeed, the ultimate weapon of World War II proved to be not a powerful tank or a specific type of aircraft, but a gigantic piece of military hardware combining the newly augmented power of both air and naval operations, the aircraft carrier. Every diverse element of the military machine had a crucial role to play, but the aircraft carrier stood head and shoulders above any other single system as the key to victory in the mid-1940s. The naval warfare of World War II, the history of the ships, tactics, and battles that shaped the fighting in the Atlantic and Pacific, looks at the course of the fighting in the Atlantic and Pacific during the war and the changes both sides made in an effort to establish supremacy. Chapter 1. Fighting in the Atlantic. The Battle of the Atlantic represented an arms race on multiple levels, including both offensive weapon systems and defensive countermeasures. While the Allies honed their convoy technology and improved its use, the Germans added new features to their U-boats, enabling them to move faster, hit harder, and attempt to escape after an attack in a more effective manner. The back-and-forth exchange witnessed the Germans discovering a fresh weakness, exploiting it, and then, after a brief period of notable success, losing ground to new countermeasures. In this race, the Allies eventually outpaced the Axis, leading to the effective defeat of the U-boats and the reduction to a mere annoyance later in the war. The stakes of this naval struggle remained very high throughout the war. America's control of the sea lanes provided Britain with food and weaponry, while the Lend-Lease program supplied the Soviets with material without which their defeat would have been nearly assured. Alongside tens of thousands of trucks, locomotives, tanks, cars, motorcycles, artillery pieces, 15 million pairs of boots, 14 billion pounds of food, much of it high-calorie processed meat, and countless rounds of ammunition, the Americans also supplied the USSR with a wide range of raw materials brought in by sea. Without U.S. control of the sea lanes, the Soviets would have foundered as the American supply of one vital metal, aluminum, to their quasi-hostile allies demonstrates. The Soviet Union, however, was desperately short of aluminum. When Harry Hopkins paid his first visit to Joseph Stalin in July 1941, to ask the Soviet dictator what the country needed to keep fighting in light of the German invasion, the number one priority he was given was immediate aluminum shipments so that the Soviet Union could build more aircraft. From then until the end of the war, the United States poured aluminum into the Soviet Union. By 1943, it was providing the Soviets more of the metal than was actually allocated to the entire United States Navy. In abandoning the creation of aircraft carriers, the Nazis unwittingly gave up any chance of truly controlling the Atlantic. The U-boats struck like ambush predators, and certain classes of land-based aircraft joined the fray also. But the German lack of aircraft carriers crippled their ability to carry out modern fleet actions and achieve decisive victory at sea. The Allied commanders already knew from shipping experiences in World War I that large convoys of ships offered a poor target for U-boats. Escorts protected such aggregations of vessels more effectively, concentrating their defensive force and providing mutual support. Therefore, in World War II, convoys provided the rule, not the exception, from the beginning. Though the Germans gained some signal triumphs nevertheless, and nearly halted shipping at a few points, the convoy system, married to technological and tactical advances, ultimately prevailed. Even such an apparently simple factor as improving cargo